Hello, this is your host, Michael Riversong, here at the 2006 Extraordinary Technology Conference. And we have with us this evening Ty Robinson, and he's heading up a tremendous number of projects involved with education about alternative fuels and alternative energy. He's been involved with the JoCell project, which is going to have a special workshop after the conference. Ty, go ahead and explain what you're doing briefly. I think that would be a good way to get started.
Well, a lot of people call these alternative fuels or alternative fuel vehicles. And I really feel that if we're going to make these go mainstream, we can't keep calling them the alternative. So here in the United States, I call them American fuel vehicles. That way we get to keep the same initials. And the best thing about these fuels is that we're coming back to them. We're coming full circle to them. This is what engines were originally intended to run on. The very first internal combustion engine in an automobile, in a vehicle, in 1809 was running on hydrogen for fuel. A little bit later, in the 1870s, Nicholas Otto developed the four-stroke internal combustion engine, again, to run on hydrogen. A little bit later, in the 1890s, Rudolf Diesel developed the compression ignition engine, and although he could run petroleum diesel through it, his intentions were to run peanut oil through it. So again, we're coming back to this fuel full circle through the use of biodiesel. All of these fuels are available all across the country today for less than the price of gasoline or diesel. So they're cheaper, they're local, so they support our economy, and they increase our nation's security. So there's no reason not to use them, especially if you want to save some money.
I really like your term, American fuel vehicles, and I'm going to start adopting that too, because I've never felt comfortable with the term alternative. It smacks too much of something that most of us are not. We're just folks trying to get to work and trying to get around and have our fun, and we need really good fuel to do that, and we don't have it right now.
Yeah, that's true. The first alternative fuels were gasoline and diesel. Look at the Model T and Henry Ford. All the vehicles originally running off of his assembly line were filled with ethanol. He used corn fiber filler for the seat cushions and for the convertible tops. He used soy-based paints, and he filled the fuel tank with ethanol because it supported his local farmers. That's where it came from. As many of the parts as he could get came locally. So J.P. Morgan came to him and said, you got to stop telling people that they can run alcohol in their vehicles, and you got to stop filling them with ethanol. Ford was like, no way. Well, because he wouldn't go willingly, that's where Prohibition came from. It wasn't to keep people from drinking alcohol, even though they had the support of women against drinking and women against alcohol, mothers against alcohol, whatever the exact terms were.
Women's Christian Temperance Union was the main focus of that movement.
So they got the support and rallied the support of that movement, but it was about keeping people from brewing their own fuel. It wasn't about keeping people from drinking alcohol. And so now we're stuck with this infrastructure of gasoline and diesel around the country. But you know what? We do have seven fuels available all over the country today for less than the price of gasoline or diesel. And that's mainly what I'm talking about, is that we have a place for all of these fuels. We don't have enough of any one of them to satisfy all of our energy demands. So let's use all of them. By using a distributed approach to fuels, we become more secure. By using ethanol, by using biodiesel. Those biofuels are great, but we have to be very careful that we're getting our biofuels from waste crops, because it's just, it's morally unacceptable to make biofuels from food when we have starving people in the world. So let's make our biofuels from waste crops. After that, we have other local fuels such as propane and methane and hydrogen. All of these fuels are available around the country today. Depending on the region you're in, you can find them for less than the price of gasoline or diesel. There's also electric cars. There's a great place for electric cars that work well today. So if any of those fuels or any of those means of transportation meets your needs, I would implore you to choose it.
This local fuel thing is really important, because when you get right down to it, something like 70% of all driving is within maybe 25 to 50 miles of your home base. And it's ridiculous to have one standard fuel for everything when you don't have one standard location for everything. After all, what's that old saying? Time was created so that everything doesn't happen all at once. Space was created so it doesn't all happen to you. And each space, each area of the country has the perfect fuel for that area. Many years ago, I lived in Crested Butte, Colorado, and it was obvious that there, the ideal fuel would be restaurant waste. Because they had 33 restaurants in a town of 5,000 people.
Yeah.
So what better fuel could possibly be developed? Of course, at that time, we didn't have momentum, we didn't have funding, and at that point, gas was still cheap. It wasn't taking up such a huge chunk of our paycheck. But I want to go back to something. I find it interesting that you mentioned J.P. Morgan, because Morgan also went up against Tesla and won against Tesla. And that's a big reason why things are at the state they are right now. So it was really a combination of him and, of course, Rockefeller. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, Rockefeller had such a profound influence because he's also the guy who mutated our educational system. So it's hard to learn about this stuff.
It's about wealth and power, and that's what our current system does. Our economy really is based on oil because that's what moves all of our goods and our products. And when you have a finite element such as oil that's being sold for less than its true value, we have a wealth-depleting economy. So every gallon that's sold is enslaving the people that use it. It's empowering the few that are at the top and in control of the petroleum. They are becoming more powerful and more wealthy. And we need to get back to the local fuels because that brings the power back to the people. There's no better way to do it.
I love it. And it's a free enterprise way to bring power to the people. That's something that I really like a lot, too. I live in Wyoming, and that's kind of the free enterprise state in so many ways. And I really see the value of it because in Wyoming, we don't have much of an economy. And we do have a lot of oil and gas there, so that's kind of funny.
We have a lot of natural gas, too.
Yeah.
A lot of methane.
So it's funny, we might be one of the places where an ideal local fuel might end up being the stuff we take out of the ground, but we wouldn't have to take out so much because we're only using it there. We don't have to export it, and we don't have to deal with all the complications that come with exporting so much fuel.
For my personal transportation requirements, I haven't bought any gasoline or diesel for quite a long time now, and I don't intend to, but if I did have to buy gasoline, I would make sure that I buy it from a local source. My first choice would be Sinclair because it comes from Wyoming. I also like to buy I would buy gasoline from Tessora because I know it comes from Alaska. So those are local fuels. We need to choose the local fuels first, then focus on the renewables and the sustainables. Now, how we do this and how we make it happen is there is infrastructure scattered around the country. So my company, Intergalactic Hydrogen, makes multi-fuel vehicles. Although our focus is on renewable hydrogen up at the top of the fuel hierarchy pyramid, we understand that there's a bunch of different fuels that work depending on the region you're in. So if you have a multi-fuel vehicle that can run on hydrogen or natural gas or any blend of the two, or you could use ethanol or you could use gasoline or you could use propane, well then you have the ultimate power because you get to choose what fuel you want to use. So now that we have these multi-fuel vehicles, we're also working on multi-fuel gas stations. So instead of going to a gas station, you actually go to a fuel store so that you have choice at the pump. Because you should be allowed. When you go to the grocery store, there's how many different kinds of milk that you can buy? Well, you should have the same choice with your fuels. You should be able to choose, and then there's competition for your dollars for whoever's producing those fuels, and you're going to win out. The consumer's going to win because there's more fuels to choose from, and you're going to be able to choose the cheapest fuel for your needs.
That's beautiful. Now, I understand you have made your own hydrogen vehicle that you tool around the country in. How do you get your hydrogen?
Well, today I'll take any hydrogen we can get because any hydrogen is good hydrogen as far as I'm concerned right now because we're not producing any of it in too big a quantities to make an impact. But we have to be focused on solar produced hydrogen. I can produce a little bit of hydrogen with solar panels or wind generator. Not as much as I use in my vehicle because a vehicle uses quite a lot. But if all the different 20 hydrogen filling stations that I know of in my region here, my favorite one is in Phoenix, Arizona, because they make what I'd call free-range hydrogen. They use solar panels during the day, and they electrolyze water. That's the true essence of solar hydrogen. But I call it free-range hydrogen because in the middle of the night, they're using grid power. But they're using off-peak grid power. They're using power from the Palo Verde nuclear power plant. You can't shut the power plant off in the middle of the night. So instead of grounding that power and wasting it and getting rid of it, store that power so you can use it later. So storing that power as hydrogen is an ideal way to store off-peak grid power, because storing it as hydrogen, we can then save it and use it later however we want, because there's so many great uses for hydrogen. We can chemically combine it in a fuel cell to make electricity, or we can burn it in our existing internal combustion engines. We can heat our homes with it, we can cool our homes with it, we can cook our food, and we can heat hot water. So there's so many great different uses of hydrogen that I feel that that's one of the great reasons why it's at the top of the fuel hierarchy pyramid.
I see. Now, this fuel hierarchy pyramid, that's a term I haven't heard before, but it's a pretty neat one. What are the levels of that pyramid?
Down at the very base, at the bottom, is your dirtiest fuels. You've got jet fuel, kerosene, diesel. Those are very dirty fuels. A little bit cleaner than that, you've got gasoline. So that's one step up. Now, the next step up from that, you'd have propane. At least it's local. And it's slightly cleaner than gasoline when you burn it. Now, above that, you would have the biofuels. You've got biodiesel, you've got ethanol. Now, these alcohols and biofuels, as we've talked about before, we need to make sure that they're coming from waste products and waste crops, because then they work very well for us. But even then, when we're using our waste crops, they are finite. There's only so much waste we're making. So we need to recognize that. And remember, if we're making biodiesel out of food crops and we're making ethanol out of food crops, we're taken away from the food supply, and there's only so much land to grow food on, so we need to stay away from that altogether. There's also, right below that, or right in that area, is the methane that comes from underground sources. Now, that is a fossil fuel, but methane reproduces itself much more rapidly than petroleum oil or crude oil. So methane is a very good source of fuel. But above that methane is the renewable methane. And that's the stuff that we have that we're producing every day at pig farms, cow farms, sewage treatment plants, landfills, all these places. Anywhere you have decomposing matter, you're making methane. And it's much better to burn that methane than to allow it to escape into the atmosphere, because methane is 22 times more potent of a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. So if you're letting methane escape into the atmosphere, you're doing more bad. But if you're burning it, you're actually doing more good. So burn that methane. Now, the one thing I like about methane is that it's a gateway fuel. It's leading to something even better. And that better is hydrogen, because all the components that we can make an internal combustion engine burn natural gas with are basically the same components we need to make that engine burn hydrogen. Now, again, there's two colors of hydrogen. There's black hydrogen and there's green hydrogen. That black hydrogen coming from finite fossil fuel resources, we need to stay away from, because that's not sustainable. But again, the above that, which is at that top of that pyramid, is renewable hydrogen. If we use renewable energy sources such as sun, wind, wave action, all of those that are otherwise being wasted right now, because the sun is hitting the surface of the earth every day, and if we're not using it, it's being wasted. So let's collect that energy and store it as hydrogen. Then it's very valuable to us because of all the different uses we have for hydrogen.
I understand that there have been many developments in hydrogen storage. Now, Roger Billings, way back when, had helped put together the whole metal hydride storage concept, which basically puts it into a tank where it's stored in a gray powder. And I just became aware that there's some leakage out of that system, and that's not great. So somebody said earlier today that you could use nanotubes of carbon molecules and store hydrogen in that manner with no leakage. Do you know anything about that new technology?
Sure. There's basically three ways that we can store hydrogen. We can store it as a compressed gas, we can store it as a liquid, a cryogenic liquid that's very cold, or we can store it chemically. And the metal hydride storage systems have been in use for a while now, and it's basically using powdered metals, powdered aluminum, magnesium, titanium, iron, different metals that act like a sponge to absorb the hydrogen. That way you can hold it at a lower pressure and hold hold it in greater volume, or actually in greater density within the same volume. So a metal hydride is nice because it holds more hydrogen in the same amount of volume, but it takes up a lot of weight. It's very heavy. So there's some other developments, as you said. There's you can use a carbon plate inside of a compressed hydrogen tank, and the carbon plate will act kind of like a sponge. Or you can use carbon nanotubes or carbon buckyballs. There's even glass spheres that are used to absorb more hydrogen and hold it in there. Now, all these are in development right now, and they will be coming forth. But of the three viable options we have today, you know, if we look at the options, we have the cryogenic liquid hydrogen, belongs in spacecrafts and airplanes, up in the atmosphere, because it basically takes a robot to refuel your liquid hydrogen tank because it is so cold. You can't touch it, and it leaks off. You have to leak it off, or it'll build up pressure and build up temperature, which would be a problem. The metal hydride is nice because it holds three times the amount of fuel as a compressed hydrogen tank of the same volume, but the weight penalty is pretty high. It's about nine times as much weight. So that weight penalty makes it not very good for automobiles and where we need lightweight. But in a boat where you need ballast down low, or in a stationary application, a metal hydride makes sense. But the compressed hydrogen is what seems to be the most realistic today, because it fits within our existing infrastructure. The reason the auto manufacturers have predominantly chosen compressed hydrogen fuel is because of the successful track record of compressed natural gas. I also like compressed hydrogen fuel because we can combine it with the existing compressed natural gas infrastructure. Our multi-fuel vehicles can fill up with hydrogen one day, fill up with natural gas the next day, and it doesn't matter what blend you have in there of hydrogen to methane, the internal combustion engine will burn it. So that makes it very useful today. But in the future, when we have dedicated hydrogen fuel vehicles, we will also have advanced storage mediums such as the carbon buckyballs and the glass spheres.
I like that. Well, it's about time to wrap all this up. I'd like you to go ahead and give us your contact information, because this is something that I think a lot of people should get into.
Well, thank you very much for having me. My name is Ty Robinson. My company is Intergalactic Hydrogen. You can find us on the web, www.intergalactichydrogen.com. If that was too long for you, we've also got a smaller website called h2go.info. That's h2go.info. Hope you have a great search out there in cyberspace and answer some of your questions, and we look forward to helping you choose a cleaner fuel to reduce your transportation costs.
Well, thank you very much, Ty, and you have a wonderful conference here.